I want you to go back in the passage to get context here. Go back to chapter 21, verse 10. Here's David. He's fleeing. He's running for his life from Saul, King Saul. And I want you to look at chapter 21, verse 10. It says, "And David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul, and went to Achish, the king of Gash." Now, do you know what Gash is? It's a city. Actually, it's the city of the Philistines. And you know who the Philistines were? They were the enemies of God. They were the enemies of Israel. And the people here were nomads. And they would wander from place to place with their sheep. Actually, this city here, the city of Gath, was the hometown of a very popular man. You know his name? Goliath. And his giant's family. He had brothers who were giants. And so here's David. He flees. He's afraid of Saul. And he goes to Achish, the king of Gath, Philistine king. Now, verses 18 to 22, you find specifically, we're told there's another giant that lives there. He has six toes and six fingers. And each of these five main cities of the Philistines had its own king. So this king is Achish. Look at verse 11. "And the servants of Achish said unto him, Is not this David the king of the land?" It's like, what's he doing? "Did they not sing one to another of him in dances, saying, Saul hath slain his thousands and David his ten thousands? Guys, look. There's the king, King David. What's he doing in our town of Gath?" And David, verse 12, laid up these words in his heart, and was sore afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. You know, there's a psalm that's written that pretty well gives us David's feelings at this time, his emotions. Turn to Psalm 34. Leave your finger here in 1 Samuel 21. But turn to Psalm chapter 34. And I want you to see David's feelings at this time. The first couple of verses talk about this and lay the foundation here. But look at verse 1. Look what David says. And he writes this at this time. "I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. The humble shall hear thereof and be glad. Oh, magnify the Lord with me." You know that song. "And let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me from all my fears." That's when he was there. He was afraid of the king. Then it says, verse 5, "They looked upon unto him and were lightened, and their faces were not ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encampeth round about them that fear him and delivereth them. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him." Now see, David's writing this when he is sore afraid. It means he's just scared all the way to his bones. Now, go back to 1 Samuel 21. Look at verse 13. Look what he does. He shows up at this Philistine city. Got that big giant, six fingers, six toes. All the other Philistine warriors are saying, "Hey, look who's here. Look who's here." Look at verse 13. "And he changed his behavior before them and feigned himself." It's like faked himself. "Mad in their hands and scrabbled on the doors of the gate." Scrabbled is another word for scribbled. He just started scribbling on the doors of the gate. "And let his spittle fall down upon his beard." You see the picture here? I mean, he's acting like a crazy man. He's scratching on the door of the gate and spit drooling down on his beard. Now you say, well, what's so big about that? Well, in that culture, men never allowed their beard to be disturbed or unkept. Never. And so what was going on in David's life? Here's what I think is going on. God is removing the crutches. God's removing the crutches. One writer said, when every one of your crutches is removed, things begin to erode. He says, as the erosion continues, you begin to think differently. You begin to think differently. And then you begin to replace those thoughts with strange thoughts. And then you begin to lose sight of the truth. And then you begin to hit bottom. Isn't that interesting? Step by step, till you hit bottom, crutches removed, you think differently, strange thoughts, you lose sight of the truth, you hit bottom. I think that's what's happened here. Now, look at verse 14. Then said Achish unto his servants, lo, ye see the man is mad. Wherefore, or why then, have you brought him to me? Have I need of madmen that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? Well, the word mad there in the Hebrew language means to rave through insanity. That's what the word mad means there. He's a raving, mad, insane man. One writer said, there might be centuries between us and David, but this man and his experiences are more relevant than ever in our times. And one of those is the very familiar experience of leaning on others, other people and other things, rather than leaning on the Lord. And David knew what it meant to have crutches stripped away. So do we. You ever have your crutches stripped away? I mean, David has been a schemer. David hasn't been constantly honest. And let me give you three of his schemes. One scheme was, tell Saul I went to Bethlehem to celebrate the new moon feast with my family. He'll tell him I did that. And the result, he and his best friend Jonathan become separated for good. Another scheme, I am here at the temple on the mission of the king. Feed me and my men. Remember that? The result, 85 priests were murdered and the whole city wiped out. Now, I am a crazy man scrabbling on the door of your courtroom. What's the result? Poor testimony before the king of Gath and his people. Now, we're to the text. Look at verse 1. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave Adullam. Cave Adullam. And that's named, by the way, after a nearby city. It was located in the Valley of Elah. And the Valley of Elah, you say, why is that so important? Because that's where David slew Goliath. It's right there. It's about 2 miles south of the place where he killed Goliath. It's about 13 miles west of Bethlehem, David's hometown. One writer put it this way. At this place is a hill some 500 feet high, pierced with numerous caverns. This front picture, if you look at that, that's one of the caves of Adullam. I've seen these. I've been to these caves. But he's hiding out in one of those caves. This writer says, some of these caverns are large enough to hold 200 or 300 men. And according to tradition, this cave was at Wadi Kuritan between Bethlehem and the Dead Sea. He said, but the idea of that cannot be well maintained. One other writer said, it's supposed to be the now called Deir Duban, a number of pits or underground vaults. Some are square, some are 15 or 20 feet deep with perpendicular sides and a soft limestone or chalky rocks. And he says they're on the borders of the Philistine plain at the base of the Judean mountains, 6 miles southwest from Bethlehem, well adapted for concealing a number of refugees. Let me give you one other quote. This is a man named Condor in his book called Tenting in Palestine. He says, the site of Adullam is ruinous, but not deserted. The sides of the tributary valley are lined with rows of caves. If you look up on these limestone edifices, if you just call it, they're lined with rows of caves. He says, and these we found inhabited and full of flocks and herds. But still more interesting was the discovery of a separate cave. On a hill itself, a low, smoke-filled, blackened burrow, which was the home of a single family. He said, we could not but suppose as we entered the gloomy abode that our feet were standing on the very footprints of the shepherd king who were encamped between the Philistines and Jews. And here he was but 3 miles distant from the thickets of Herod. So here it is. Here it is. The lowest moment of David's life. Paul calls it the evil day. This is the evil day. You know, many times in a Christian's life, he'll go through trials and trials and this and that, and all of a sudden, boom, everything falls apart. It could be called the evil day, where Satan just throws his whole arsenal at you, trying to get you to quit, trying to get you sidetracked. The evil day. The big day he's going to look at the time that he bottomed out. You want to know how he felt? He wrote about it. Turn to Psalm 142. Look at verse 1. Psalm 142, verse 1. Says, Mashal of David. This is a prayer when he was in the cave. Notice what it says. I cried unto the Lord with my voice. With my voice unto the Lord did I make my supplication. Supplication means earnestly begging. Verse 2. I poured out my complaint before him. I showed before him my trouble. This means David is saying, I laid it all on the table before God. I shared all my problems with God. Look at verse 3. It says, when my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my path. In the way wherein I walked, have they privily or privately laid a snare for me. So he has an overwhelmed spirit here. Weighed down, that's what it means. You ever feel that way? Plagued, besieged, it means to languish, to faint, to swoon. It means to be affected very deeply in his mind and spirit. It means he was emotionally devastated. You know, an interesting read, and I shared this a few years ago, what the world out there says you do when you're overwhelmed. You want to know some of the things the world tells you to do? You ready? This is the world's counsel. One, take a breath. If you're not in a position to leave, you can feel better right away by practicing breathing exercises. You're overwhelmed, just breathe. Getting more oxygen into your body and releasing physical tension are two ways. Breathing exercises can benefit you, and you can do them anytime, anywhere, even if your demanding situation isn't letting up. Then he says, another one, writer says, take a mental break. Another says, reframe your situation. Another, look at your situation differently. You may be able to put it in a different perspective. One that causes you less stress. Here's one. Try progressive muscle relaxation. That'll help you. You're overwhelmed. Here's another one. A technique where you tense and release all of your muscle groups, leaving your body feeling more relaxed afterwards. Another writer, Elizabeth Scott, in her book, said this. Here's some suggestions when you feel overwhelmed. Throw on some music and clean the house. I think that would overwhelm me. Here's a good one. Great insight here. Watch aquarium fish. That'll take care of all your overwhelmed feeling. Here's one. Take a walk with a friend. Sing along with music. Set up a home spa. I mean, go out and get one of those $12,000 jacuzzis. Cut down on some of your commitments. Play positive affirmations hangman. What on earth is that? Play the stress management memory game. Oh, wow, okay. Here's one. Walk your dog. Oh, here's a similar one. Try breathing exercises. Good, I feel not so overwhelmed. Oh, I'm much better. Here's one, draw a picture. Here's one, dance to your favorite music. Work on becoming an optimist. Oh, thank you so much. Try focused meditation. Decode a cryptogram puzzle. Yes, cryptogram puzzle. Take a mini vacation. I like that, especially, Brother Rick, if it's a fishing one. I like that. Keep a gratitude journal. Play music and cook something wonderful. Surround yourself with, ooh, this is good. Surround yourself with positive energy. Isn't that good? Wow, thank you for sharing that. Learn to say no to demands on your time. Take a nap. Get daily stress tips. Pray. Oh, that's the last in the list. Well, let's go back to the psalm. David said in verse 4, I looked on my right hand and beheld, and there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. What is he saying? No friends. No security. No hope. No food. No promises to cling to. Alone in a dark cave. Nobody there except God. No escape. So what does he do? Well, let me tell you what he does. He cries out to God. Look at verse 5. I cried unto thee, O Lord. I said, thou art my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. That word, by the way, that word cried is a word which means to shriek. It means to scream. You ever got alone with God and just shrieked and cried out to him? I suggest you do it somewhere where people don't hear you. But I have done this. I've gotten away with God, got alone with God, and just cried out to him. That's what David did. He says, thou art my refuge. That word refuge is, dear Jehovah God, you are my shelter. You are my shelter, not this cave. You are my protection. He says, thou art my refuge and my portion in the land of the living. That word portion means you're my allotment. It's like you are all I want in life. Psalm 102:17, he will regard the prayer of the destitute and not despise their prayer. Deuteronomy 4:29, but if from thence thou shalt seek the Lord thy God, watch this, thou shalt find him. If thou seek him with all thy heart and with all thy soul. Psalm 116, verse 6, the Lord preserveth the simple. I was brought low, and he helped me. Psalm 143, verse 7, hear me speedily, O Lord. My spirit faileth. Hide not thy face from me, lest I be like unto them that go down into the pit. Psalm 143, verse 8, cause me to hear thy loving kindness in the morning. For in thee do I trust. Cause me to know the way wherein I should walk. You ever feel like that? God, just show me which way to go. For I lift up my soul unto thee. Psalm 143, verse 9. Deliver me, O Lord, from my enemies. I flee unto thee, and flee unto thee to hide me. Now look at verse 6. Attend unto my cry. That word attend means give heart, give ear. Hearken to my croaking. My screaming. For I am brought very low. Oh my. Deliver me from my persecutors. For they are stronger than I. You ever been around people who persecute you that are smarter than you, that know how to say it better than you, and it really puts you low? That's the way David was. He says in verse 7, bring my soul out of prison, that I may praise thy name. The righteous shall compass me about. It's like righteous people crowd in around me with sympathy, for thou shalt deal bountifully with me. So here we have Saul and his men are surrounding the entrance of the cave. King Saul trying to kill him. And they're out in front of the cave. They're looking for him. So David is saying, I'm surrounded, Lord. I'm in prison, dear God. One writer said this. He said, David has been brought to the place where God can truly begin to shape him and use him when the sovereign God brings us to nothing. Did you catch this? I think this is powerful. David had been brought to the place where God can truly begin to shape him and use him when the sovereign God brings us to nothing. It's like, you know, the first 20 years, you think you got your marriage all together. All of a sudden, it falls apart. God has allowed you to come to the place now where he can truly shape you, where you're saying, God, I need your help. He says, God brings us to nothing. It is to reroute our lives, not to end them. Human perspective says, aha, you've ruined this, you've ruined that. End your life. But God says, no, no, you're in the cave. But that doesn't mean curtains. It's curtains. That means it's time to reroute your life. Now it's time to start anew. That's exactly what God does with David. This is powerful. Notice what happens now. Look at verse 1. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. I'm thinking, yikes. You think about what's going on here. King Saul and his men are desperately trying to find David so they can kill him. I mean, they're looking everywhere. They're circling the area where David is hiding, and they have every eye on David's family, and there's spies everywhere. You know, David's family knows that they're continuously under the watchful eye of Saul and his spies. They know that. And most likely they think that David's going to be able to offer them some kind of protection. Now you think about this. David's all by himself. He's hiding out. And his family said, let's go be with David. He'll protect us. So they flee for their lives. And they're thinking Saul will kill them. And by the way, they also come to comfort and support David. So what is David going to do? Well, again, here he is in the cave. Here he is secluded. Here he is. He's bottomed out. This is the worst time of his life. This is the evil day in his life. He's hidden from the sight of the people. He's screaming, crying out to God. And he's doing his best to survive. So now all of a sudden he sees a large number of family members, including his dad, coming to him. You know, what's interesting to me is they know where he is. Did you catch that? And I'm thinking, how do they know that? Well, they're coming to live with him. And live where? They're coming to live in a cave with him. I can imagine David saying, well, how am I going to feed all of these? Where are they going to sleep? Oh, my. Now we have a much larger group to keep hidden. No way. How on earth will we all escape Saul and all of his soldiers? How are we going to do that, Lord? So not only his brethren and his father's house come. Look who else comes. Look at verse 2. And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented, gathered themselves unto him, and he became captain over them, and there was with him about 400 men. 400 100 disgruntled ones. The discontented ones, the dissatisfied ones. This is the initial formation of David's army. By the way, not really your most competent army, wouldn't you say? I think it's worth noting that there are no, watch this, there are no, quote, important people in the group. Are you with me? There's no big shots. Well, let's look at who comes. Number one, it says the troubled come, everyone that was in distress. That word distress is the Hebrew word zuck. It means that everyone that was under pressure. So here comes hundreds of people under stress. Here comes a group of the traumatized people, people with a lot of strain and a lot of issues and a lot of tension in their lives. Wow. These guys are going to come hang out with me. They're all distressed. Number two, look who's coming. The threatened. Everyone that's in debt. That's a word, Hebrew word, nashah, which means to lend on interest, to have a number of creditors. So here were a bunch of people who are coming to be with David who couldn't pay their bills. Number three, so you have the troubled, the threatened, now the tormented. The troubled, the threatened, and the tormented. Everyone that was discontented there. That word discontented means bitter in soul. These people had a grudge. They had some axe to grind. These are the people that are coming to David that feel they've been wronged. They feel they've been mistreated. Now, keep in mind, Saul was a very harsh ruler. Saul overtaxed the people. King Saul mistreated people. He was himself given over to intense fits of anger and depression. So much he threw a spear at David trying to kill him. And these people couldn't take it any longer. So David ends up, watch this, with a cave full of discontents, or may I say malcontents. Now, the text doesn't explain this, but whatever the situation was, these individuals somehow could not meet the expectations of Saul. And so rather than being put to death or being made slaves, what did they choose? They chose to be free in their service to David. One writer said, can you imagine that? It's bad enough to be in there alone feeling like a worm, but to have over 400 more worms crawling there with you. That's a mess. You know, let me just say this. Sometimes when you're in a cave, you don't want others around. I'm talking about spiritually. Right? Just leave me alone. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to see anybody. Just go. You can't stand to be with people. And you hate to admit it publicly. You usually don't. But it's true. Sometimes you just want to be made left alone. And I have a feeling that at that moment in David's life, he wanted nobody around. Why is that? Because if he wasn't worth anything to himself, he didn't see his worth to anybody else. Now, what does he do? He begins to make some very important transitions in his life. Transitions. By the way, this is important for all of us. We're all in transitions. You know that? All of us. You're in transition right now. He makes a transition from a cave of despair to a cave of hope. He makes a transition from an escape hatch to a training ground. He makes a transition from malcontents to mighty men of valor. And we learn later that these men became very skilled with a sword and bow and arrow. And where'd they learn these skills? In a cave with David. And I can picture David in his drills with them saying, okay, man, say it together. Say it. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Say it. Oh, magnify the Lord with me. And let us exalt his name together. And let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord and he heard me. I sought the Lord and he heard me. And delivered me from all my fears. And delivered me from all my fears. Can you hear it? So he was in transition, making transition with these men from being malcontents to being mighty men of valor. Then there's another transition. From darkness to light. And from despair to hope. Can you hear him saying, okay, men? Okay, men? Say it. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. And saying to those in debt, hey, fellas, those of you in debt, Psalm 34:9, oh, fear the Lord, O ye saints, for there is no want or more lack to them that fear him. Guys, the reason you're in debt is because you didn't fear him. Now to you discontented ones, Psalm 34, verse 10, the young lions do lack and suffer hunger, but they that seek the Lord shall not want or lack any good thing. So what do you think, David? Hey, David, is it time to forget about yourself? Time to live for others? Hey, David, is it time to start equipping and training others for the work of the ministry? Hey, David is making that transition from being beaten down to becoming the leader of the mightiest men of Israel. One writer said David became sort of a Robin Hood. His Sherwood Forest was the rugged Judean wilderness with its mountains and caves and deep wadis. Those are oases. There he commanded a group of mavericks because God wanted him to become a maverick king. Israel would never see another king like David. So it begs the question, and we're going to close here in a minute. Why this turning point in David? Are you with me? Why? Why such a change in David's life? Well, number one, David was transparent. You know, as you read through these Psalms, you find that David was not too proud to admit he had a need. I think that's, to me, that's 90% of it. A person comes to a place where he's so proud and struts and God won't use him. But coming to the place where a person says, God, I can't do it. I'm a worm. I need you. Well, he wasn't too proud to admit he had a need. Number two, he was humble enough to cry out for help. You know, thank God for David's vulnerability. Are you listening? Here's a real man. Here's a real man. You know, some people live their whole lives under the veneer of piety. And when they suffer, they're too proud to say, I need help. When they're having a hard time, they're too proud to tell somebody about it. Why? Because people will think you're not spiritual. Well, this is what gains our respect for David, right? He was humble enough to cry out for God to help. And number three, David had a teachable spirit. David had a teachable spirit. He was transparent, humble, teachable. How tragic it is that we can live in one cave after another and never learn from God. Not David, as one writer said. You think about it. God turned his cave into a training center. Are you with me? God turned his cave into a training center. Why is that? Because David was willing to turn to the Lord for help. So what do you think? Do you think it's time that we become honest with God? Time that we become honest with others? I mean, here's what I think. I think it's time we stop trying to impress people with the fact that everything going on in our lives has a silver lining and is pretty and happy with no clouds, no caves. Say, how you doing? I'm just living the dream, man. How many times have I been told that this week? Just living the dream, dude. And I say, what dream are you living? The guy yesterday. I'm just living the dream. No, I mean, day before yesterday. Just living the dream. I said, what dream? It goes like that. Financial stability. He's living the dream. Everything's cool. You know, that lasts for a while until we've completely unraveled. Until we've completely destroyed our lives and our relationships. One writer said, remember the conversion of a soul is the miracle of the moment. Here it is. Listen to this. But the making of a saint is the task of a lifetime. And God isn't about to give up. Even when you're in such a cave. He's not through, even though you're the lowest you've ever been. So what? What about this? Here it is. So you just found out you lost your job, huh? Where do you go? I mean, you just got news that your child is messed up morally. What do you do? I mean, you just found out that one of your children wants nothing to do with you or the church or God. Where do you go? You just stay quiet about it? You're too embarrassed? You've blown it financially. Maybe you found out, young people, your parent is an alcoholic or your dad's into pornography. Well, everybody thinks he's a spiritual leader. You find out your mate is unfaithful and doesn't know that you know about it. You flunked the exam. You mess up in an interview. You've broken the law. It's only time till you end up in jail. Hey, where do you go? You need a shelter. You need someone to listen to. Someone who understands. You need a cave to hide out in. So here's David, a man after God's own heart. That's what God says. He's a man after my own heart. And he turns to God, finally. Yeah, I mean, he has all these schemes, ends up with people murdered, killed, priests killed. He finds God in a place of rest and repair. You know how I see David up until now? I see David, like I've given this before, like a poor little stray alley cat. Scrawny, you know, skinny, weak, nearly starved to death, big hair balls all over and balding in places and wet and cut ear and scarred nose and cornered by the neighborhood Rottweiler. Beaten up and bitten and hissing and barely able to lift a paw on its own defense. Moments away from a horrible and cruel crushing bite of that huge dog. That's where David was. So what do we learn from him? Here it is. Men. For the men, be transparent. You're not Superman. Take your cape off. Don't be so proud you can't admit you need God. Number two, be humble enough to cry out for help. And number three, have a teachable spirit. Don't present yourself as a know-it-all. You don't know it all. Neither do I. Have a teachable spirit. Transparent, humble, teachable. Father, thank you for your word. I thank you for the life of David. I do thank you for the men that you've brought to Woodside, and these men are men of God. All of us in transition, all of us. All of us with issues, all of us. Dear God, raise up men who are transparent, who are real. Men who are humble enough to cry out for help. Will you pray for me? Will you help me? Can I get with you? I need help. And men who have a teachable spirit. It's like, what do you see in my life? You have a verse for me. Can you help me? Lord, raise up men that are transparent, humble, and teachable. Men of God. Men like David, a man after your own heart, dear God.